It's a new year, 2025, and you're probably thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How can I make this the best year ever? How am I going to build something for myself? I'm dying to be my own boss or see if I can turn this business idea I've been kicking around into a reality. But I don't know how to make that happen. Shopify is the key, and let me tell you how. The best time to start your new business is right now. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates. No coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. Shopify makes it easy to manage your growing business. They help with details like shipping, taxes, and payments from one single dashboard, allowing you to focus on the important stuff, like growing your business. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Established in 2025. Has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/redcircle.
Welcome back to the build up. The first 10 minutes of this are going to be Spencer Davies explaining to me all the jobs that he has right now because the 10 minutes after will be me reminding you of all the jobs I have right now because we're both freelancing the hell out of the not just NBA season but other things as well on my end. But Spencer, Sports Illustrated and what else? ...
What else? Great question. Great question, man. No, I'm doing a lot, just different gigs here and there. You know, the Cavs stuff, like you said, Sports Illustrated, Cavs on SI, have a podcast over there, Courtside with Cavs on SI. NBA coverage, that's at rg.org for RG Media, is where I do all of my freelance articles and features that you've seen me do in the past over at Basketball News and yes. Basketball Insiders and Amico Hoops and everywhere I've been, honestly. And then, of course, I'm still linked up with our boy Matt Babcock at BabcockHoops.com doing his NBA draft coverage and just did a couple articles for him so far this year. So, yeah, doing a lot. And that's not even getting into the behind-the-scenes stuff I do for FanDuel Sports Network or for Ultimate Cleveland Sports Show here locally. So,
if you really want... This is what it takes. Listen, kids, if you're watching this. Yeah,
if you want to work in sports, this is what you do.
This is what it takes.
My Lord.
I have a lot of shit too. So
yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Donut Dan, to answer your comment, because we got a comment from a guy, Donut Dan here. You have pictures of Ethan, Greg, and Alex Salito, Greg Sylvander, Ethan Skolnick, but where's Brady at? Brady hasn't been on the show yet. But I should organize that. I should organize that probably after transaction season because we can talk like actual basketball, which we may do some of that today. But I mean, admittedly, I love the trade deadline. And we're 2 weeks away from the trade deadline, guys. So there's potentially a lot of things that may or may not happen. You cover the Cavs. We're going to get to the Cavs. But you also cover the NBA. We're going to get to the NBA. Now, trade deadline predictions. We have a number of players who could move, who could be moved, who may, whatever, right? And typically we get a double-digit amount of trades when it's deadline season. We haven't gotten that yet. We may get that this year, or we may not. Second apron may have something to say about that. What is the biggest thing that you're looking out for? Before we get into predictions, what's the biggest thing you're looking out for? Is it just like this Jimmy Butler saga? Because that's honestly what's been dominating my NBA headspace lately. It's like, what's going to happen here?
That's honestly what I'm looking out for too. Jimmy Butler and the whole saga with Miami, seeing Kevin Love post on his Instagram. It's just been really fun to follow along with, even in, you know, the mood probably around Miami and with the fans down there is probably more irritated than anything. As an outsider, admittedly, it's been really funny to just kind of see Kevin Love make so much light out of it. And I mean, you look at what's going on in Phoenix, some may point to Bradley Beal. I know he's been linked to the Bucks by a couple of reports. Those are really the two names that I've seen get floated out there. Cam Johnson's a dominant name. I'm sure we're going to get into that because we're going to be talking Cavs.
Oh, yeah.
But like, other than those names, I haven't really seen or heard anything around team improvement, because you just mentioned it. It's so hard to make a trade nowadays because of how the aprons are set up and salary cap and all that stuff that Eric Pincus is a lot better at than me. And, you know, like, I don't want to try to make sense of any of it because I would rather have somebody tell you the truth than just make stuff up. But it is. It's hard to make a trade now with the amount of money being paid and obviously the penalties and the different apron sets of first apron, second apron, and then obviously luxury tax that goes into effect. So those are the things that I'm looking out for. Just what you mentioned, and then Bradley Beal and Cam Johnson are the ones that pop up for me.
The latest twist in this Jimmy Butler thing is just fascinating because he gets suspended yesterday.
I laughed when I got that notification, dude. Like, you know, he gets suspended for 7 games early in the season. Then he comes back. I see Kevin Love post up like the Wolf of Wall Street thing. And he plays for what, 2 or 3 games? And then again, he misses a team plane. Clearly on purpose. He's wearing sneakers that are purple and orange and black after the fact that he had his hair dyed purple a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and which is flavored, now you got in my opinion.
All of this stuff just trolling and trying to find ways to make this entertaining and talking about how the whole story is going to come out. And that's why I'm not like trying to side anyways, but just the entire scenario and situation is just so funny to me on the outside looking in all the way up here in Ohio. I'm just enjoying the ride. I'm not going to lie.
It's crazy. He comes back, he gets suspended because he missed the flight, and you know, just overall, just like, I mean, what a lack of a better way of putting it, what a dick move, honestly.
Just like, it's a cat and mouse game, Brian.
All the shit going on, all the shit going on, you missed the flight. And then on top of that, you have Gambo, who does, I believe, radio out in Phoenix, reporting that Bradley Beal would waive his no trade clause and be open to joining the Milwaukee Bucks if such a trade were to happen, because the Jimmy Butler thing is going to have to take maybe 4 or 5 teams legitimately. Like, 3 might not be enough. It may need to be 4 or 5 teams. And then Chris Haynes comes out and reports, no, Bradley Beal doesn't want to go to Milwaukee, essentially. So it's like, all right, cool. We have 2 very credible sources here, 1 nationally, 1 locally in Arizona. And it's like, they have different information, presumably coming from different people. I don't know who's talking to who. Obviously, Gambo seems very well sourced up in Phoenix, as Ethan Skolnick has talked about on 5 on the Floor, for example, and others. So this is just kind of where we are. So, all right, trade deadline predictions. You can hit Jimmy, you can hit whatever. I have one immediately. I have a Jimmy one too, but I want to get to that in a second, because that one's a little less fully fleshed out than this other one I have. But trade deadline predictions, what's the main thing that you think is going to happen between now and the deadline?
Going to happen is, I think, Jimmy. We were talking about Jimmy before.
Sure.
You know, lower kind of marginal moves, like Chris Boucher has been playing really well for the Raptors. You know, like, this is what we do when we talk about trades, right? We go after the spin type of players, the ones that are not the flashy names, but can give your team an impact. Like something like what the Suns just did by acquiring Nick Richards, you know, like those are the types of moves that I think you see at these deadlines, because again, we go back, making the home run trade might be a thing of the past with the apron.
So you don't think there's going to be a big trade? Is that your prediction?
Like home run trade, maybe not. Like, do you consider, obviously Jimmy Butler is a big name and Bradley Beal's a big name, but are those home run hitting trades like a James Harden? Like, are they in that echelon to you?
I think Jimmy is.
Okay.
I think Jimmy still is. Like, I'll put it to you this way. Can he swing the championship? Depending on where he goes, yeah. The problem is he wants to go to Phoenix, and if he goes to Phoenix, I don't think he does. I think he makes them better. I think Jimmy makes Phoenix better. Like, I think unilaterally, people will, yeah, he's better than Bradley Beal. He makes them better. But does he make Phoenix like a threat to Oklahoma City in a series? He makes that series interesting, but Oklahoma City should still beat that team in 6 games.
I think Jimmy's really well conditioned, but his body's kind of caught up to him too. Mm-hmm. So that's also where that comes into play. I mean, just scanning the standings, like, I don't know, could Orlando use a shooter, right? Like, can they go out and try and find somebody that can make jump shots because they're at the bottom of the league in 3-point percentage?
Mm-hmm.
You look at a team like the Grizzlies, who I think could be at the top of the West if they really put together just another piece on that team.
They're a Jimmy team for me, but they don't seem to be interested in extending him, so Jimmy doesn't want to go there.
And that's where this is also kind of a push and shove. Like, if Jimmy wants to get paid and be a primary guy, where is that exactly? You know, like, not being disrespectful to Jimmy, but Jimmy's in his mid-30s. This is just the reality of how it goes. Like, what was Chris Paul making at his age? You know, like, after all the big, you know, like.
I mean, well, here's the thing. If you're Jimmy, I get why he wants his money. He probably, 100%. I don't think he wanted to play this long. I mean, not this long. I think he was going to retire after this contract. And then he probably looked up and saw what Kawhi got and saw what Paul George got. And he's probably like, what? Like, you know, like, I need to stick around. I need to get one more big contract. I think that's what it is. And, you know, also from a human perspective, when you come from where he comes from, like, you want every fucking dollar you can get.
Especially for the amount of energy that he spent in the bubble in that final series. You see what he laid out on the line there. And then obviously what came after. And we're going to hear the whole story eventually. But were there any empty promises? We've seen Pat Riley do stuff in the past that has not exactly been following through on his words. Hear it from Dwayne Wade before, like, that he wasn't paid after all those years, despite, you know, what he gave to the franchise. Like, trying to find a middle ground here and not be too one-sided about it, because Jimmy does probably have some valid points. He's also thinking, I think, a little bit too much about what he's still capable of.
But do you think he goes somewhere, though? Yes or no?
I think he has to. Are you going to continue suspending him the rest of the year for 2 games if he misses flights?
Do you think it's Phoenix?
Yeah.
You think he just ends up getting his way? See, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure about that. Like, I could see Pat Riley and the Heat front office just being like, "Can we find another team who will take him? Can we find a team that will take him and even potentially waive him? Like, if we get the right matching salary, you know, like, there, it's not a super clean process. The apron gets in the way of, like, who will be able to take him on after that. So if you're Phoenix, for example, you can't allow that to happen. Yeah. But if you're Miami, you can't operate, and I doubt that they are, you can't operate under the standpoint of, hey, we absolutely have to send him to Phoenix and give him what he wants, so to speak. You're trying to find the best deal.
How do we get this man back to where he started?
Chicago?
Yeah.
Well,
because they've got their own kind of sets of problems. That saw a report about how the front office is kind of at a crossroads in a way of trying to figure out where they are as an organization. consistently for the last like 3 or 4 years. I think it was last week they had the same record as they've had in the like last 3 or 4 seasons. So like, it's not like they've gotten worse, but it's not like they've gotten better, even though the talent has changed and the coaches have been different, and it hasn't mattered at this point. Apparently, you know, Zach LaVine's been there for like 7, 8 seasons now, believe it or not.
I don't think Nikola he makes Vucevic. Sense. I don't think LaVine makes sense for Miami. I think he sure. makes sense. I think you brought up Orlando earlier, and well, I don't know if Orlando is going to cobble together the salary, because for whatever reason, they seem kind of content right now. I want Orlando to do something. Orlando, you talked about them needing a shooter. I just think overall, you need an offensive creator on the wing, and Zach LaVine will be helpful there, even though I'm not like the biggest Zach LaVine sort of fan. Like, I have a hard time. Maybe this is old school, Spencer. I have a hard time being convinced, hey, we like just as a team, right? You're like, hey, we need to trade for someone who's going to help us in the playoffs. Let's trade for someone who's about 30 years old and has played 4 career playoff games. Like, fundamentally to me, like, granted, maybe he'd be awesome in the playoffs. We just haven't seen it. But if I don't think he's a missing piece. That said, I think he could help Orlando a good amount. The contract information is important. $43 million this year, $46 next year, player option for about $49 the year after. And, you know, like that's just a big number if you're the Orlando Magic. Because if you look at the Orlando Magic sort of salary structure to get to $43 million, you're obviously not using Paolo Banchero, who you're about to extend. You're not going to use Franz Wagner, who already extended. Jonathan Isaac is making 25 this year, inexplicably. And then 15, 14, 14, 15. Like, he has an extension in place already. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who you just signed, is at 22.7. I don't think they're going to move on from him that quickly. I think KCP is actually someone you'd want to play with Zach LaVine, and you'd want to rotate Jalen Suggs in there. You want to have Franz Wagner. You want to have Paolo Banchero. You want to rotate your centers. The centers is where I feel like they need to sort of condense things, because you have Wendell Carter at 11.9. You have Mo Wagner, who now has a torn ACL, unfortunately, at 11 flat. Goga Batazi is at 9. All of these guys are signed beyond this season as well, so that's important. And I believe I'm missing somebody at center, but I mean, that's it. So you're looking at those three guys. If you cobble together like Isaac for 25, maybe you throw in one of the centers who are in that $11 to $9 million range, you're still $7 million or so short. And that's where Gary Harris comes into play. And then you could sort of play with, all right, whatever the draft capital is. So, I mean, look at that. We just put Zach LaVine on the Orlando Magic.
Where's the graphic? We need to put that up now. you had the trade machine working and put together the salaries, and look at you. It's funny that you mentioned that, by the way, about Zach LaVine, because I'm thinking in like the ilk of, if you don't believe that he's like a, you know, like the star that leads you in the playoffs, but he's definitely a piece that helps you in the playoffs, possibly.
You have Paolo.
It kind of reminds me a little bit of Denver, of when Aaron Gordon got traded over there. Maybe not the same downgrade in usage. Like, Zach would still command the ball more than Aaron would, and he wouldn't just be set to be a cutter and the team's, you know, best defender. But like, just like a little bit of a scale back in role. Maybe it conserves his energy a little bit more, and also your role changes. You're not just ball dominant the whole time, and you're able to kind of play around guys, and that's different. That's different for somebody who's been pretty much primary guy the last, like, basically since he's been in Chicago, other than when he was playing with DeMar, and obviously, you know, Kobe White's been kind of pushed into that higher role too now. So, you know, I think Zach would be a good fit over there. But now that you got my wheels spinning.
Yes, let's go.
With Zach and Jimmy and Bradley, like, could you do a multi-team trade that gets these guys all
so,
on each other's teams?
So
like, because
Matt,
that's the thing I'm thinking about.
Matt Moore and I were doing this last week on here.
Oh, boy.
And
Hardwood Paroxysm.
Yeah. And we had some fun with that one. And any trade ideas or things that you want us to talk about in the comments, let us know. I will put comments on the board, as you guys know, because I see a bunch of people watching here, but people are scared to jump into the conversation. Don't be. Matt Moore and I, we were talking about last week, just, okay, maybe there's a trade where Jimmy does go to Phoenix, Bradley Beal does go to Milwaukee, Zach LaVine goes here, or Zach LaVine may end up in Milwaukee and Bradley Beal goes somewhere else. I sneakily think the Lakers have been oddly quiet, and the salaries are probably the reason why, because even if you put together Vanderbilt, Rui Hachimura, Gabe Vincent, you're not in Jimmy Butler, Bradley Beal, or even Zach LaVine territory, I don't think. Or you may be closer to Zach LaVine just because he's at 43. I'll check that in a second. But you're definitely not at Bradley Beal territory. You're still several million off. Same with Jimmy Butler. I wonder if there is a way for the Lakers to get involved and get one of these guys. Get like a Bradley Beal, for example, because you could see Bradley Beal just wanting to, like, all right, fine, I'll live in Los Angeles, you know, whatever. I mean, thoughts with everybody dealing with the fires in Los Angeles. But at the same time, like, I could see him being down to play for the Lakers is the point. And then when you get to, like, just the rest of it, I could see a trade where that happens. I'm still looking at New Orleans too, Spencer. Like, what are they going to do? Because they've tried to trade Brandon Ingram before. He's expiring. Doesn't look like he's going to get an extension. So he's free agency bound. If you're trading for him, you don't necessarily absolutely have to sign him to an extension, but you probably should be at least open to doing a prove it deal, 1+1 balloon payment type of thing. But I can't help but think, like, if I'm Miami and I'm trying to move on from Jimmy, or if I'm trying to move on from LaVine, like, Brandon Ingram in a short-term situation, and then you could just figure it out later, is not the worst thing. It's just the mechanics of how you get there are difficult. But I'd be interested in taking a swing on Brandon Ingram is the point, if I'm one of these other teams.
Sure. I like Brandon Ingram too, when he's engaged and he's able to kind of be that three-level scorer, more willing to take more than the mid-range and actually attack the basket. And obviously he's got length for days. There's just something about Brandon that just kind of scares me sometimes, though, is that he plays sleepy. Isn't that a good description?
It's his eyes in every headshot he's ever taken. I understand what you're saying.
Join the club. as an Asian, I completely understand that. Trust me. But
I think prediction wise, what I would say, I can't shake this feeling, Spencer. I can't shake this feeling that Jimmy Butler gets traded, but it's not to Phoenix.
Okay,
it's not.
It's a random team, maybe.
I kind of feel like Portland. No.
Like, because I was thinking in the back of my head too, you know, like, they talk about Jeremy Grant making all that money over there, and obviously there's DeAndre Ayton that I don't know fits in that place, and they're kind of at a weird place too.
Jimmy's gone so nuclear. If you're Miami, how could you not be desperately trying to find a non-Phoenix team and just be like, yo,
to spite him,
just fucking take him. And literally give us just shitty matching salary that is done within the next 2 years and a pick swap.
You make a really good point, by the way, because, like, through these, you know, call them antics.
Sure.
Like, are you actively killing your own trade value and potential free agency value? Like,
on purpose to get to Phoenix or whatever. And listen, Jimmy Butler is one of my favorite players in the NBA. I've said this for a long time, even when he was in Philadelphia. But I just don't, the way he's acting, it's like, if you're Miami, I can't help but shake this feeling. Prediction wise, I'll just say, I think Jimmy Butler gets traded and doesn't go to the Suns.
Okay.
I'll just say that. Not to say he won't wind up there in some, you know, fucking imperfect way or whatever.
I wish we could keep talking about this, because I saw the press release, the I'm back. And I about lost my mind after the suspension. And then he comes back for 2 or 3 games and he's right back suspended again because he didn't go and get on time for a flight. It's just amazing. It's an amazing saga. I love the NBA. I do. I love
Me
the
too,
NBA.
I swear. Dota dead. Spurs question mark. I don't think the Spurs would want any parts. Sidewalk Publishing, trade Jimmy for Dyson Daniels, Clint Capella, and Larry Nance Jr. I think Atlanta.
Why would Atlanta do that?
I think also, if you're the Heat, I don't think you have Khalil Ware now. and Bam, obviously. You have Bam. I don't think they're going to need Clint Capela. I do. It's funny because, like, another trade that Matt and I talked about, or a sort of, like, could this happen type of thing. Prediction-wise, I think Denver does something, and there is a Denver-Atlanta thing that you could sort of piece together. Now that Denver has actually been playing better with Russell Westbrook.
That's like, right. Starting lineup, Westbrook, like Russell Westbrook, too. Don't forget that. Don't forget that.
Like, could it be – this is what we talk about. I want to get your thoughts on it. Because I could see something like this happening. Michael Porter Jr. reunites with his AAU teammate, Trae Young, in Atlanta. And coming back, it's some form of, like, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Onyeka Okongwu, what, you know, something like that.
Right? I don't know if they would give up double O like that. Maybe DeAndre Hunter, but even so,
like, Hunter, like something like that. I think it's Bogdanovic plus something, because Bogdanovic feels kind of like the odd man, like that's gonna be the odd man out.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, no, I think maybe they'd be willing to part with DeAndre Hunter just given the growth of Jalen Johnson.
Selling high on DeAndre Hunter too. He's having a good year.
Yeah, selling very high considering how well he's shot from deep, but also off the bench, just being how good he's been defensively and attacking off closeouts and not even, you know, being afraid to shoot at all three levels, to be honest. But I could see that. I also, you know, we go back to the LaVine conversation with Denver, you know, like,
ooh. Oh, Jamal Murray and Zach LaVine defensively would be,
it'll be a little rough, but you know, I think Denver's style this year is conducive to athletes who cut and play around Jokic, which like Christian Brown, for example, has been having a phenomenal season as a transition player and playing off of Jokic, just cutting through the middle and from the corners and diagonally, knowing the chemistry he's had with Nikola now that he's been playing with him more and more and more. You know, that's why I think Russell Westbrook's been such a natural fit with Jokic too, is because he still has his athleticism, believe it or not, and is running the floor really well. These are all guys playing around Jokic that don't necessarily have to be able to shoot. Denver's not a great three-point shooting team, and they don't shoot that many. So they are more kind of apt to trying to get to the line and score off of backdoors and off balls and anything of the sort that revolves around Jokic being the conductor. So, yeah, I like LaVine makes sense to me there.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
we have Jimmy Butler going to not Phoenix. To recap, we have Zach LaVine going to Denver or Orlando.
See, now we're just throwing all the ideas out. You know who I'd love to see, like, Jokic have with him is like a DiVincenzo. You know, like, you know, like, and I don't think that.
Oh, you just opened something up.
Here we go. See, we're just riffing off of each other. This is exactly what happens when you get two guys who did this forever at a place where they had used to worked and had all the lime streams ever.
RIP basketball news.
They have not been together very often since, and the riffing begins.
Who mentioned this trade on social media? I forget who it was, but I thought it was borderline genius. I'm overstating it on purpose, but there was a Julius Randle, Jordan Poole swap. There may have been another piece to fill in, like, to match the salary exactly, but the point of it is it was Randle and Poole. And I was like, I hate how much I actually like this trade.
Listen,
I think Julius Randle does get moved. I do think if you're Minnesota, like, I mean, you could just let him expire, but I mean, I think you could cut your losses and just try to get, like, some filler. Like, you need to break him up into multiple players also. Like, that's another team. Atlanta, Orlando, they have these contracts. Even the Lakers, they have these contracts that you can piece together for somebody who's making something like $33 million. Not that they should do it for Randle, but, like, these are teams that have those kind of salaries that they're going to be tied to a lot of different players. But I think Randle gets moved. I don't know if it's Washington, but it would be very like just it would be chef's kiss if he went to Washington of all places.
I think it would better Julius Randle to get out of Minnesota because he's just and I said this before like as soon as the trade happened over the summer, I was pretty skeptical about it. And I texted a bunch of my cap guys and I was like, why? Like, what is this? What, why? Why did either Spencer, team do this really? That was what I asked. And like, I'm not trying to be like hot take guy. Like, I said, why?
I was at a fight. I was covering a fight. Michaela Mayer versus Sandy Ryan, women's welterweight championship, Madison Square Garden Theater. I left early because the trade happened while I was there. And I was like, I need to go do a show, whatever. I got to do something on this. I ended up doing like something on YouTube and me and Matt did a Buckets episode of Action Network about the trade. And like, I couldn't believe they also got DiVincenzo, who unfortunately was injured, missed that Knick game. That would have been cool to see him back there. But yeah, like, I just think Randall's going to be moved. I do have one more trade prediction for you. This one you're going to... I don't know if you're going to like this one, actually. This one's it's going to be scary for you. Cam Johnson, who I have on the graphic and have failed to mention, so we have Cam Johnson. Cam Johnson to Oklahoma City for... There's one of two packages that can work. You can do Isaiah Joe, Aaron Wiggins, and picks... Or you can do Lou Dort, Kenrich Williams in picks. I feel like you probably do Isaiah Joe, Aaron Wiggins. They both are locked up long-term, have team options. They did the Atlanta Braves thing where they just signed everyone to these long-term deals that are like cheap.
Nice reference.
You know, this is Cason Wallace. Like you can throw him in there with Dort or whatever. I don't feel like they want to give up Dort. But I feel like you can give up Isaiah Joe, Aaron Wiggins, and picks. And if you're the Nets, you're like, yeah, this is great. We have two players on affordable salaries. We can flip them later or develop them because we know how to develop players. The problem is we just don't know how to have stars. But we know how to develop players. And we can take the picks too. I feel like Oklahoma City to Cam Johnson is like right there. I think you were hinting at earlier, though, that the Cavs would be interested in him too. So if you can touch both things.
So with Oklahoma City... I think that makes a lot of sense, but with Cleveland, it's really hard. And I think this is also the case for Oklahoma City. When you're standing at the top of the standings, and it sounds so short-sighted to say this halfway through the season, but why do you want to mess up a good thing? In Oklahoma City's case, they're without Chet Holmgren right now. They're still without Isaiah Hartenstein as he comes back from an injury.
Yeah.
They're pretty damn good. And I know that the playoffs didn't show that last year, and they were an early out, but that happens to young teams. The Cavs, arguably, played the best against the Celtics last year with their roster that wasn't utilized as much with the depth that it's been this year against Boston. Mm. And there's this kind of, this gets into the Cavs conversation, so maybe I'll save this. But fit-wise, I think Cam fits both of those teams really well. What are you willing to give up? What are you willing to sacrifice in the locker room, on the court, on your roster, just as far as your depth goes? Mm-hmm. Are you willing to do those things? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the question they have to ask themselves. Now, is someone trying to get to the level of an OKC or a Cleveland or an OKC or a Houston and Memphis going to make a move like that? Yes, I could probably see that. Like the tiers of where teams are right now, like a second tier team, for example, that could try and go and make a swing for Cam Johnson to get them to that first tier. But I don't know if the first tier teams necessarily need to make a move at the deadline. That's my opinion.
Cam Johnson has 22.5 million this year, 20.5 after that, and 22.5 in the last year.
I was also listening to Bobby Marks. The reason that a lot of these two are tough to make is because Cam Johnson also gets a $4.5 million bonus that counts against an apron. So that is another piece of this that I think goes unmentioned.
Oklahoma City is one of the teams that, like, they're still in the sweet spot where they could afford to do a lot of different things because they don't have their money like super tied up.
Shout out Sam Presti.
Yeah. Yep. If Cleveland were to do this, am I wrong to say that? And Diamond Hicks, I see your comment. We're going to put that up real quick and then we'll transition to Cavs talk because we're overdue to do that. Am I wrong to say that, like would Cleveland trade Caris LeVert? Would Kenny Atkinson get in the way of that? Because, like, that's one of his guys. I mean, I know he's expiring and that's a salary you move, but I can't help but think, like, Kenny may want him there. You know what I mean?
You're not off base there. He's talked the world of him this year and about how his shot profile is where he wanted it to be in Brooklyn and that he failed him in Brooklyn at doing that. And now Caris is taking threes and he's taking layups. And he's had the fewest amount of mid-range shots that he's had. He's used Caris as the best defender on the other end to guard
he used
other
to do that
teams'
in Brooklyn
best,
too.
Best yeah. player. Like, so Kenny loves him. And the locker room loves Caris.
Yes,
so this again
so
goes
likeable.
Back. This again goes back to the game of, okay, yeah, you want to improve, but what are you willing to give up? What are you willing to part with? Because this is not a game of 2K. There are emotions involved. There are people that are close with each other who have been playing with each other for 3 years, and that's why the chemistry is so good as it is in the Cavs locker room. So that, I think, is what is at the forefront of everyone's minds. Caris would obviously be one of the top assets that the Cavs could use in a trade, but do they want to do that? And like you said, Kenny's been close with him throughout his career. He's the one that kind of developed him in Brooklyn and then just sees this completely different and more improved version of him in Cleveland and then improves that improved version. And he's been paramount to their success and the way that he's been able to wear all different kinds of masks and do different jobs for the Cavs over the years. It's a valuable piece. It's a really valuable piece. So I don't know if they'd be.
It's a new year, 2025, and you're probably thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How can I make this the best year ever? How am I going to build something for myself? I'm dying to be my own boss or see if I can turn this business idea I've been kicking around into a reality. But I don't know how to make that happen. Shopify is the key, and let me tell you how. The best time to start your new business is right now. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates. No coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. Shopify makes it easy to manage your growing business. They help with details like shipping, taxes, and payments from one single dashboard, allowing you to focus on the important stuff, like growing your business. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Established in 2025. Has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/redcircle.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
Willing to do that. More of the conversations that are being floated around Cavs Twitter, and I know that we're going to get into our Cavs discussion, but like it revolves around Isaac Okoro and the George Niangs and Jalen Tyson, and obviously that 2031 first round pick that everyone's so excited about when it's a seventh grader currently.
This is why the reason I asked is because for Cam Johnson, like the cleanest way to kind of do it is a trade that I don't think the Cavs would ever make. Is you're not doing, I don't think they want to trade Caris LeVert and Dean Wade, even though like it feels like 2K wise, that's what you would do. But in real life, you know, I feel like you want to keep both those guys.
Dean's like, played every position for them too. He started at the three, he's their backup five. He guards centers, he guards wings, guards, like those are really important things on this team, especially one that's lacking in the bigger department and in the wing department. So like, I wouldn't say like Dean would probably be untouchable in a multiple player for one player trade because you're killing your depth doing that.
You have a $6.6 million number on him next year. That's not even fully guaranteed. That obviously will be because they will want to keep him because they're really good. Also, if you look at the numbers, they're really good when he's out there. Diamond Hicks. Why is LaVine not a good fit for Miami? Tyler's getting blitzed every night. Well, Diamond, I read his contract earlier. I'm not sure that he would be excited about that. And I am just like, I don't know. Do you really want to tie up more than $70 million annually in Tyler Hero and Zach LaVine when you have another 20, whatever it is, on Terry Rozier that brings you to like the mid-90s in terms of salary? Then you add Duncan Robinson and you're at like what, $115 million roughly? Just quick math real quick. Like, do you want to tie all your money into those four guards? Like, I'm not all of it, but like a good chunk of it. I'm not sure you want to do that. And if I'm Chicago, like, what am I getting back? Like, LaVine for Jimmy is off numbers wise. So you need to like put in some filler in there because Jimmy makes approximately $6 million more than Zach LaVine. Zach LaVine's also signed. Well, he has a player option in 2026, 2027. The Heat don't seem to want salary beyond 2026 because that seems like a year where free agency may return in some form. It won't be 2010, but there could be good players who don't get extended by then, who may hit the market because teams are going to have a hard time keeping teams together and they may elect to, like Paul George with the Clippers, all right, let him walk and just have the space and figure it out later. I think we are going to see more of that in some cases. I think the Heat were ready to do that and probably still are with Jimmy Butler to bring it back full circle. So there's my answer to that. Predictions wise. So we have Zach LaVine, speaking of going to either Orlando or Denver. I have Cameron Johnson going to OKC. We have Jimmy Butler. I have him going not to Phoenix.
I have him going to Phoenix. Yeah. We talked about Julius Randle.
I may change
some good stuff there.
I may change my mind on Jimmy Butler, but like I initially I was like, okay, they'll probably send him to Phoenix. But now I'm like, man, I could just see Pat Riley just like, man, fuck this guy. I ain't sending him where he wants.
Don't forget,
to go.
Like you got, you know, Chris Boucher. I'm sure a team will check in on Jonas Valanciunas or like the Malcolm Brogdons of the world. Like on like those lower teams always look out for those two.
Last thing I'm saying, then we'll go to Cleveland. I think Jonas Valanciunas, once Nick Richards went to Phoenix, I was like, I wonder if the Knicks would get Jonas Valanciunas. Because, and I talk about this, New York Got Game Weekly, New York Post Sports, Dexter Henry and I, we host a Knicks show. We're going to talk about them tonight at 7:30. I think we have a guest from Knicks Fan TV. I want to make sure that that's finalized, though. We will post that. But one of the things we talk about a lot is, all right, can you afford to wait for Mitchell Robinson and the ramp-up period and see if he's healthy? Or do you have to address backup center now? Jonas Valanciunas is a dude who you can give the ball to. He can score down low. The problem is defensively, he's going to be very slow guarding pick and roll. And that's one of your issues already. It's like they over, like OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges constantly overhelp on pick and roll situations because like they don't fully trust Karl-Anthony Towns on an island because, I mean, we've seen 10 years of sample size as to why you shouldn't. So guys get open threes against them. So this against the Bulls. It's like, all right. Zach LaVine, pick and roll. Here's Nikola Vucevic. Oh, I'm getting double teamed. Here, Kobe White, shoot this corner three. Same thing against Atlanta, where the pass goes to whomever the big is at the time. Could be Jalen Johnson, could be Onyeka Okongwu. Not just Clint Capella because there's a pass like that. And then it's like, all right, DeAndre Hunter, open three. We saw this the first game that they played the Cavs, I believe earlier this year. Evan Mobley here. We're going to overhelp. Oh, guess who's in the corner? You know, it could be Dean Wade, it could be Georges Niang, could be Karis, could be Donovan Mitchell, Darius Gar, like anybody. You know what I mean? Like that's one of the things. So I feel like Jonas Valanciunas is a team or is a guy that could end up with the Knicks.
He could be that like kind of Hartenstein role too, if you think about it, because that's something they obviously lost in free agency over to OKC, and he was a big part of their playoff run. And other than Mitchell Robinson, do they really have that kind of backup big, like that beefy guy? You know what I'm saying? Like, so is that a fit? I think so. And it also depends too on Tibbs playing more than 7-8 guys in the playoffs when it comes to it. Like,
I think he'd play Jonas.
Yeah, I would hope so because he does like his vets.
Bruiser also. Jonas is. I want him coming off the bench in the playoffs if I got a team. But the problem is, like, just defensively, they're not going to have a top 11 defense. And historically, you need to be top 11 in offense and defense
and
to win a championship.
The other thing that I think too with Jonas, and I don't think he would have a problem with this, but you have to also consider, would he be in support of like being a backup or third big on a contender? Like, I know that that's probably something else that he would probably have to come to grips with. I know that he's, you know, in Washington, he's come off the bench a couple times and all that stuff. But like, if you're going to a contender, you actually might be like the second or third option as a big man, especially with the modern NBA and how fours are playing the five now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's probably something as well that you have to think about, like almost Tyson Chandler-esque in a way.
All right. Tell me why the Cavs could win a championship this year.
Okay. Where do I start? They are not one-dimensional anymore. Watch their offense. They can play in three different speeds. You can be fast with the small ball five lineup. You can slow it down in the half court and have plenty of havoc and motion going on off the ball with different sets and different tendencies. And then you can have that kind of middle ground to where you're not completely being speedy, but you're also able to slow it down. So like the fact that they can play three paces, they have different styles. They can match you in different ways. Defensively, if they're getting beat in the man, they go straight to the zone. And then the zone will stop you. And if the zone's not working, then they'll end up doing some switching, shell coverage. You know, like they have so many different ways to attack you, to defend you, and so many different weapons that are utilized. Plus the depth that's actually being used this year, unlike past years, that are keeping the primary guys in the core four fresh so that when they go into April, May, and possibly June, they're not going to be tired out of their minds. They're not going to have knick-knack injuries on their knees. They're no tendonitis, no none of those wear and tear things. And then you just also look at the shot allocation and the minute allocation. It's all spread out. Kenny Atkinson is not just depending on five guys. He's depending on 10 guys. And each of them has had their moment this year. So I think that is why they're a true contender. I don't look at anything from the past because it's a brand new philosophy, brand new strategy. Yes, mostly the same players. But that's also a big reason why they're at where they're at. It's because chemistry is built organically. if they've spent time together for 2 to 3 years, some cases for these guys, 4 years, it's going to show up. And you have a lot of people in that locker room who understand there's unfinished business here. And they know what the goal is. They know how good they are. They're not cocky, but they're confident. And they also have this level-headed mentality as a locker room, which trickles down from Kenny Atkinson and Donovan Mitchell and so forth. So that is why I think they're a contender, because the habits they're building now, forget the wins, forget the losses. They're 36-7. They lost one in Houston last night because guy didn't make free throws. Big whoop. This team has the mentality and the maturity to where they're not playing down to competition or playing up to competition. They play everyone the same way, and they have counters for your counters. So that's why I think that they're a contender.
I agree with you, by the way. What I want to ask is, what do you see in their competition that makes it look like, oh, they can do this year? Or is it just more to what you're saying about the Cavaliers' improvements? Because while I think people have their criticisms about, hey, this is mostly the same team, I'm like, no. As somebody who covered the Nets those first 3 years when Kenny Atkinson was there, it's like, no, Kenny Atkinson's a different dude. And now he has more talent. Like, I saw what he was doing with Isaiah Whitehead and Jeremy Lin and Spencer Dinwiddie before he was this. And KJ McDaniels and Quincy Acey, and you know what I mean? Like, I saw him coaching those dudes. And when he had these guys, I'm like, he has four guys that are all-star caliber on this team, you know? Yeah. Evan Mobley, I mean, he still may be one this year, but he's going to be a multiple-time all-star in his career. Jared Allen's been there. Darius Garland has also been there, actually. And Donovan Mitchell, obviously, I mean, he'll go again. But what do you see in the competition? Like, does Boston look like they've taken a step back? Did they match up well enough with OKC when they had that high-profile game that we all gathered to watch a week or two ago? You know, with the Knicks, did they finally overcome that hurdle? Do they finally look like they may have their number because their roster construction? Like, what are you seeing in their competition and how they match up with them?
So I think it is pretty, while saying that I think that the Cavs are a contender and can win a championship this year, I'm not saying that the Celtics can't repeat because they're a really good team. They know how this goes.
Nuance.
You have to be nuanced in this conversation. I think that they're deep. They know how to use what they've got. Maybe Jaylen Brown's taking a step back, but Jason Tatum's on a mission after the Olympics. We know that. And they are deep. Love Derek White. Drew Holiday, can't say enough about him. KP, when he's healthy, gives them an entire different dynamic. Al Horford somehow still looks like he's spry and doing his thing, out on the three-point line and guarding multiple positions. Peyton Pritchard, somebody that you really have to give a lot of credit to, too. Like, and, you know, you're leaving out a bunch of names on that team, but they're all champions, and they know how to get the job done. So until that job is finished and they are knocked off, then I can't say that the Cavs are more than a contender than them. New York's an interesting one. I don't know how I feel about them in the postseason. It just kind of goes back to Tibbs, and maybe this is a trope. Like, if I sound like an idiot, please, by all means, tell me. But, like, Tibbs's methods of playing guys and running them into the ground, I don't think is conducive to playoff success, because guys are going to be worn down. And I think I think to your point about the Knicks defense with Karl Anthony Towns out in the island up on the perimeter, I think they sacrificed their identity a little bit doing that. And more offensively centric, we know how good and big of a threat Cat is on the perimeter. I think he's been terrific at attacking off closeouts and taking and putting it on the ground this year.
All-star starter.
Love Mikal. Mikal is a perfect piece on a playoff team who can drop 40 on your head like we saw on Christmas. Mm-hmm. I know that he's been a little bit kind of up and down in that regard, but that's going to happen when you're a shooter and have the role that he has. Jalen Brunson, we don't need to talk about anymore. We know what he is.
Yes, so like, all-star also.
Like, yeah, of course they're a contender. I don't know if this version of the Knicks is the same as past versions of the Knicks, though. And I still have yet to be kind of swayed that playing guys 40 minutes a night, or, you know, 38 to 40 minutes a night isn't going to affect them months down the line. I need to see that.
The Knicks also have an unfavorable record against the good teams, like the really good teams. They struggle against them. And I think a big part of it is actually, like, I go back to the Oklahoma City game when they played in Oklahoma City. The Knicks played 8 guys. Oklahoma City played 10. The Knicks played all their starters 40-plus minutes. Oklahoma City played none of their starters 40 minutes. They played 2 guys like around 36, 38 minutes, and everyone else was well under that. And they also had 3 guys coming off the bench who played like a good chunk of minutes. It was in that 15, 20 range from what I remember.
And then, you know, like, you look at the, you know, Mikal being the Iron Man. I'm really curious to see if he continues to be an Iron Man with
that. See, kind of this is the ultimate boss battle. It's the guy who has the reputation and Tom Thibodeau for wearing everyone down versus Mikal Bridges, who never misses the game. And we have till the spring to see who wins out in this ultimate battle of will and playing games for as many minutes as possible.
100%.
Point in Cleveland's favor. They are first in offense as of the time we're talking about them. They are 9th in defense. Every NBA champion of the last 25 years has been top 11 in offense and defense, except for 2. Just 2. The 2 teams have something very important in common that, for example, the Knicks don't have this year, who are 2nd in offense but 17th in defense. They got up to like 14, 15 before, and they've dropped back down because they started playing better teams in January. The 2 teams, the 2nd Lakers three-peat team, the Denver Nuggets from 2023. The Lakers had Shaq, who was the best player in the NBA at the time, post Michael Jordan. The Denver Nuggets had Nikola Jokic, who was the best player in the NBA at the time and probably still is. And the Lakers also had, you know, Kobe Bryant. 2 All-NBA guys. You know, I think he was also all defense that year. And he wasn't, you know, mid-2000s Kobe yet, but young Kobe was, he was that dude. He was super athletic. He could obviously shoot. And he was just like the younger version of what we saw later on, obviously. That felt like a stupid thing to say. That's obvious. And Shaq was still like, he was still peak Shaq. It was getting close to like the end of his peak, but not quite yet, because he was in the middle of winning the finals MVPs. Shaq was still really, really, really good. The Knicks don't have that, for example, is the thing. Like, Jalen Brunson is not the best player in the NBA. Karl Anthony Towns is not the best player in the NBA. Cleveland has the formula of being top 10 in both right now, top 9 in both right now. What are they doing defensively is my question, to like make this sort of leap? Like, what makes their defense legitimate?
They're more aggressive. They've been really apt to switching this year, and that includes Jared Allen, who hasn't really done too much of that in the past. Maybe he might have been doing more drop. Yes. Evan Mobley's been matching up on people. They've also been switching Darius Garland onto wings. And in that Boston matchup in Cleveland, I think you saw that really well work out in the Cavs' favor, because it baited Jason Tatum into trying to take the easier twos, but it only led him to the trees. And he started missing some shots from that like 8-foot range, that 4-foot range, because shots were being contested. He was shooting over Darius Garland, but they were still being contested, and he was bringing kind of the guys that were behind him into the actions. So that, I think, not hiding DG, having Jarrett switch, and like I mentioned earlier, going to that 2-3 zone when the man-to-man is not working out, that is a weapon for them. I can't believe how much success that's had, because you'd think an NBA team would know how to adjust to a 3-2-3 zone, like make threes or get it to the middle and then play make from there. But every time the Cavs have employed it, it's gotten teams so shook, and I don't know why. Even good 3-point shooting teams. So that, I think, is why their defense has been good, where they have to improve.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's not a good example, because last night they faced the Rockets, and the Rockets are one of the best rebounding teams in the association. But they've got to be better at finishing defensive possessions with rebounds.
Mm.
They get the stops a lot, but they give up a lot of offensive boards.
Interesting.
So offensive boards are killing them, And I also think this is a little bit more for Donovan, but Donovan hasn't been quite as explosive getting to the rim. And when he has gotten to the rim, his rim rate and his rim percentage, not his rim rate, his rim conversion percentage is down by like 10 or 11%. So that's something to watch out for. But it also could just be kind of energy conservation. Maybe he's trying to attack guys that he's not trying, that you shouldn't attack, you know, the Go-Bears of the world per se. I asked Kenny Atkinson about that. I'll have a clip on that once I get to ask Donovan himself when they're in town here on Saturday. But so I'd say giving up offensive boards, Donovan in those attacks, and then also athletic wings do give them problems. But I will say I'm a little bit reserved to that take because there's no way you get halfway through a season, you're 36-7, and you haven't played teams that are athletic or long or strong.
Sure.
Like, I just think it's more on the Cavs to make sure that they take care of themselves. They are extremely good at taking care of the basketball despite paying a high pace. They're really good at going on these really, really long runs that people around here call cavalanches. They have multiple guys who can pass, dribble, shoot. Evan Mobley is now included in that list.
Yes, which I knew was going to happen. Once they got Kenny Atkinson, I was like, listen. I wrote about this too. I was like, listen. Evan Mobley's going to add to his game now. He's going to shoot threes and he's going to be able to do other things because Kenny Atkinson, he wants bigs to be able to do that. Like the entire time he was the Nets head coach, they were searching for a four who can do those things and they never really got it until they got Kevin Durant. and Jared Allen, like, he was experimenting with the three-point shot. Kenny Atkinson, it's pace and space, but it's also more than that. And Evan Mobley has upped his three-point volume, and he just looks like he looks like the dude he was drafted to be more and more. To the offensive rebounding point, they're middle of the road right now and giving up offensive rebounds per 100 possessions and just per game, which I do think they want to be better. Oklahoma City gives up a ton because they're small. They're like near the top of the league with Washington, but like they have other things where they're able to sort of overcome that.
They're short, not small.
Yeah.
Those guys are built like linebackers.
That's fair. Like Lou Dort is an edge rusher.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. I would take him here in Cleveland 100% opposite Myles Garrett. Come on now.
So let me ask you this. If I were to say Cleveland plays Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals, right? Let's say Boston beats the Knicks because, I mean, if they played in a playoff series, I think Boston wins that. Just matchup-wise, it's also bad for the Knicks. And if they did get Jonas Valanciunas, I don't know how much it's going to help them against Boston specifically, so I could see them not doing that. But, excuse me, if it's Cleveland-Boston, how does that look this year versus last year, assuming Donovan Mitchell and Jared Allen could finish the series?
Yeah, I was going to say Jared Allen didn't play at all in that series. Evan Mobley was the one that really kind of blossomed, and that's carried over into this year. Donovan clearly was not healthy, and that's why he only played for two games. Max Strus wasn't really around, Dean Wade was also playing on one knee.
Yeah.
Like, again, but he was insisting to play because they needed him to guard Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
Thought they played Boston pretty damn well, and I don't care about the scores.
I know.
If you look at everyone who crossed the Celtics' path in that playoff run, in that championship run, I thought that the Cavs played damn well. And Karis was big. You had amazing contributions for them, Mobley. Even Darius, like, started to show signs of getting back to himself. He's obviously not what he is now and what he's reverted back into, the man that we all know.
Sure.
The all-star caliber guard.
Sure.
Like, that I think is where they showed you that, you know, they're able to compete with those guys. Like, this is the thing about the playoffs that I think is a common misconception. Like, you see a five game series that it goes 4-1. And you assume, oh my God, that wasn't even close. But you could see a 7-game series and say, what a series. And there were 20-point blowouts at home. Right. There were 30-point blowouts on the, you know, like, I think that's a pretty common misconception. So you see 5 games and you automatically assume, maybe as an outsider or as somebody who doesn't watch the series, is, oh, that wasn't even close. but it was a really well-contested series. And then you, again, have to kind of bring in the factors that were hurting the Cavs, which is obviously not having a healthy Donovan Mitchell. And, you know, like I said, Max Strus and Dean Wade, like, that's a big deal. And especially when you don't rely on your depth throughout the season, now you have guys coming in and playing that you're probably not used to see. They were playing Marcus Morris, and he had just come the fold at the end of the season. Like, no,
I forgot about that.
No knock on Marcus Morris, but like, he came into the fold and he was playing like 20 minutes for the playoffs. Like,
yeah,
it's a lot. It's a lot to ask of for guys that haven't been around, you know, like this year, I think because Kenny's playing so many and getting them legitimate minutes. And I think there's a ton of people that have like over 17, 18 minutes on average. Like if you just go down Basketball Reference, no one's averaging over 31 minutes a game. It's getting them that experience, one. And two, you're able to rely on those guys later down the line in case an injury does happen. You know, like we talk about kind of additions with the Cavs. I think they're less needy of an athletic wing and more needy of kind of that we were just talking about Jonas Valanciunas, that kind of third backup big in case one of Evan or Jarrett goes down. Because the way they do it right now, Dean Wade is their starting small forward. He's also their backup center. But Evan Mobley is a backup center to Jared Allen. So, like, they have these weird combos, like Niang will man the four. Sometimes they'll go Dean with the four and then George at the three or vice versa with Jared Allen. Like, they have so many combinations and tall guys, like, that they are comfortable doing that. Like, their fives are Jarrett, Evan, and Dean, even though they all start with each other. They kind of mix them and match together. And that's why Kenny, I refer to him as the mad scientist, mixing up potions in the lab. He's good at what he does. And that's how he kind of allocates his minutes around and understands that he's process-oriented. And these are the substitution patterns. This is who's playing with who. But anybody on the Cavs can play together, which is kind of what makes them so dangerous, I think, moving forward and going towards more meaningful games. And this is going to be a tough stretch. This is going to be a tough stretch, too, because they are on just some crazy travel.
Yeah.
Like, you just
I have it right here.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's at Philly tomorrow. Excuse me. At Philly tomorrow, then Houston. So that's a back-to-back. So they're going to Philly.
Road home.
Road home, back-to-back. At Philly, home in Cleveland. 2 days later, home against Detroit. Detroit, who may make the playoffs this year.
Got to give them love. Big time ups to JB. Can't wait. Can't wait to talk about that on my pod.
Yeah. Then 2 days later, they're in Miami. So potential South Beach flu. And then they're home the next day against Atlanta. So instead of doing the Miami-Atlanta trip, because some teams do that, which that's dangerous if you're in the NBA or if you're just anybody in general. But
even the media.
Yeah, the Miami-Atlanta trip. But they're doing Miami and then going back to Cleveland for the second of a back-to-back the next day against the Atlanta Hawks.
Two road homes within a week. Amazing.
So we're talking about, two road homes within a week. We're talking about a week span where everything is either like a back-to-back or the next game is 2 days later. And the next time that they have 2 days in between games will be after that game against the Hawks, and then they're home against the Dallas Mavericks. But then after that, it's Boston and at Detroit. So like, it doesn't get a ton easier. After that, you have some light games. But yeah, Cleveland's got a tough stretch coming up all the way through that Boston-Detroit back-to-back.
And check out March. Check out March, dude, because that's when you have conference tournaments here. So the MAC hosts their tournament here. And then they also, Cleveland also has March Madness first round here for the men's. So
I'm seeing a lot of West Coast games.
Yep, on the road. So that's not going to get any easier, but it's good for them, though, because I think in a half of a season, you can see what a team identity is. And whether it comes from wins or losses, if they're playing their game, then you have nothing to worry about. And that's why I think if you listen to how Donovan talks about it and Kenny talks about it and all these guys, they don't sweat that loss last night. They're like, we did a lot of good things. Like, dude missed free throws. It happens. Like, you know, like, I think from a fan perspective, it's hard to take because around here you're starting to get the football crowd – kind of easing into the games, and they think that there's only 17 games to be played instead of 82. But real talk, I think they're fine. I think they have an identity. They trust each other. They love each other, and they're willing to sacrifice for each other, which I think has made this a really fun season to be covering them.
Two more questions. One, would you do Isaac Okoro for Jonas Valanciunas straight up?
I would.
Mm.
But here's the thing.
Here's the Cleveland.
Thing. It would kill that locker room because they love Isaac.
Mm.
And I know that a lot of these guys kind of are redundant. A lot of 6'5", 220 guys that are on the roster, which makes it really hard and difficult.
Yeah,
Isaac's had some trouble with injuries. It sucks because he was in the starting lineup at some point this year. He was playing a legitimate role. Kenny Atkinson kind of likened him to Bruce Brown in small pick and rolls and being able to play make out of the pockets.
Interesting.
He's obviously been a better three-point shooter. Before the injury, he was shooting 40%. And then he got screened by Ben Simmons in Brooklyn.
Yes.
Took him out with an AC joint sprain. Mm-hmm. He has not been the same since. And there's always this kind of thing that happens with Isaac where he has momentum. He's doing well in his role. And everyone's just kind of vibing. And then something like that happens and it slows the momentum down. And he's got to kind of rediscover that groove and rediscover that health. And that's scary. That it happens to his shooting shoulder too.
Mm-hmm.
And you now you're kind of lost in knowing where your spot in the rotation is going to be if you can't make shots. Defensively, he's one of the best in the NBA. I'll go on record saying that. He's one of the best in the NBA on ball and throwing him on somebody that you want to be guarded by a primary defender. No questions asked. He's a screen defeater. He is so apt at denying the ball. He's fast as hell in transition. But offensively, if that shoulder is going to affect the shot, you're limited in what you can do.
Yeah.
So that part stings because I love Ice. I think he's been underrated and underappreciated by a lot of people, especially around here. But if he can't do that, then you have to have that conversation. And again, though, it's tough, though, because he's right next to Donovan's locker room. He's right next to Jarrett's locker room, which is right next to DG's locker. And they are all... I know it sounds short-sighted to say, wow, the power of friendship, that's why you don't upgrade for a contender. But these are things you have to think about. You don't want to fracture a locker room. You don't want to do it.
But to be fair, Jonas Valanciunas was very well-liked by his teammates, at least, with the Pelicans.
100%. So I'm sure that maybe, Jonas would fit in great. But
you here's the thing about winning on the margins too. You know this, but audience, like, you got to make these tough decisions.
Yep.
Like these are the tough decisions you have to make. Like it was tough for we'll use the Heat as an example. It was tough for the Heat to move on from Goran Dragic, I'm sure, but they ended up getting Kyle Lowry in a sign and trade, which looked good for a year before that ended up falling apart. But these are the things you have to consider. The last question for me. Yes or no, the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to win the championship this year?
Oh, you're an ass. This is exactly the kind of stuff that I was glad to get away from 3 years ago. Screw it. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Why not? Sure.
Against Oklahoma City?
I hope that's the finals. I really do. Man, I can't tell you how much fun that game was to cover. The first game, I wish that Chet Holmgren was around because I wanted to see him and Evan, particularly because Chet frankly showed up Evan the first meeting they had in Cleveland. I wanted to see this new version of Evan Mobley against Chet Holmgren. Unfortunately, didn't get to see that in the first or second matchup. I want to see it on the big stage. I want to see it in the finals. Big markets be damned. Those are two of the best teams in the NBA.
That's Spencer Davies. Follow him everywhere, as we established. Everywhere. But Twitter, still calling it Twitter. Blue Sky, Sports Illustrated, RG, the RG Media, right?
Yep.
All these different places. And Babcock Hoops and honestly LinkedIn, so you can get caught up with all that stuff.
I still have to update that crap too, man. And hey, real quick too, I do have a podcast, Courtside with Cavs on SI. Yes. I'm actually recording it today on our YouTube channel, Cleveland Cavaliers on SI. So make sure to go over there and listen to us, where I'll also tell you to subscribe, rate, comment, like, and do all that good stuff for this man too. Oh, did it wrong. Yes. That guy.
Yes. Yes. Appreciate it. Channel is growing. Thank y'all for watching. Continue to support. For the boxing people, Now Your Inoue videos are up. The film study is up. We went deep into the film room on one of the best pound-for-pound boxers in the world. Some people are checking that out. And shout out to all of the people who saw that from Japan, because I was looking through the analytics. And yes, Japan loves Now Your Inoue, and you should, because he's amazing. We'll be back with more on the channel very soon. And if Jimmy Butler gets traded, there will be a stream that sometime after it happens. I will grab somebody kicking and screaming from the Five Reasons team to join me talking about Jimmy Butler. So if he gets traded, we'll be here. Thank y'all for watching. Talk again very soon.